You're listening to the Rusted Culture Podcast.
Welcome back to the Rusted Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Frank Ebersold, and it's good to have you back again today on this Good Friday. Folks, today we're going to talk about how the obstruction is contagious and where it's spread to. You might be surprised. And then, of course, we can't get away without talking about the Mueller report. That's coming up. And then we're going to follow that with some strange stories. We got a phone call to prove or disprove one of these coming up. Stay right there. The first one that we want to talk about is how the obstruction is contagious. And folks, you should know that many Republicans are choosing to look the other way when confronted with 484 pages of collusion and obstruction, but it doesn't end there. We all know that drug prices are ridiculously high, and according to a Bloomberg article in my show notes that you can see if you want to look a little bit further, Americans spent more on prescription drugs in 2016 than any other country. Any country. Pick one. Any of them. And it averages about $1,200 per person is what we're spending, and that is more than any other country. And as you might expect, cancer drugs in the United States are exorbitantly expensive, prohibitively expensive. They're costing somewhere up in the neighborhood of about $10,000 per month on average for cancer drugs. So how far are we going to let this go before we do something? And as we know, the cost is always passed on to consumers with higher premiums for health care. Most medicine costs are paid for by Medicare for most folks, but listen to this. In 2003, going all the way back to 2003, when prescription drug benefits were added to Medicare, the pharmaceutical industry lobbied to prohibit the federal government from using its huge, huge purchasing power to negotiate drug prices. That happened under a Republican president, folks. That's how it went down. Under this president, the current president, even though he said that drug makers are getting away with murder, he's refused, number one, to allow the government to negotiate lower prices through Medicare with their huge purchasing power, and two, he's not allowed the prescription drugs to be imported. So those two things, even after saying that they're getting away with murder, those two things still haven't happened. And I've said this time and time again, don't listen to what he says, folks. You know the rule. Look at what he isn't doing in this case. Yeah, you know, they're getting away with murder, but wow, that drug lobby is super strong. And guess what that drug money does? It literally flows like water in a downpour to Republicans, and Trump knows it. Maybe that's why nothing's getting done, huh? It's always about the money, folks. Money, 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 money. It's always about the money. It's no surprise, is it? The Europeans, they negotiate for lower drug prices through their government's buying power. They leverage that. It's what a smart country should do, right? Not over here, folks, where money talks, and we'll say that we're going to do that, but guess what? It never happens. At the end of the day, nothing's being done. We're missing a huge opportunity here. We've got major buying power through the government in Medicaid alone. The drug companies know it. But we're not able to negotiate like we should through that huge, we can't leverage that huge buying power. And that's a problem. That's something we've got to change. And I advocate supporting candidates that promise to allow the government through Medicare to negotiate lower drug prices. We've got to do this. Support candidates that promise to allow the government to negotiate lower drug prices. If your candidate doesn't want to support that, then don't support them. You've got to get smart with your votes, folks. You've got to get smarter with your votes. It's not all about the rhetoric. It really comes down to who you're going to place that vote with. And you've got a ton of power with that vote, so you might as well use it. And it's all about the money. Did you know that in 2018, according to OpenSecrets.org, And that's also in my show notes. Did you know that drug companies on average gave 42% more money to Republicans than Democratic congressmen and women? 42% more money to Republicans. So they're putting their money where they think it's going to do the most good. The laws start in Congress, folks. So what better way to prevent drug laws that are going to hurt the drug companies and lower their prices for drugs, right? Well, 42% more money is flowing to Republicans. We've got to fight the influence game by voting for candidates, Democrat or Republican. It doesn't matter to me in this case. But we've got to fight the influence here. Vote for the candidate, Democrat or Republican, that promises to allow the government to negotiate for lower drug prices. So here's an example today of what one Democrat, Elijah Cummings, is trying to do for Americans and how he's being thwarted by Republicans. Congressman Cummings, he's chairman of the House Oversight and Reform Committee, is trying, I say trying, to lower drug prices. But you guessed it, folks. He's running into resistance from the Republicans like Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows in trying to accomplish his goal of lowering drug prices. So here's how the game works against Americans. Earlier this month, Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows sent out letters to 12 of the biggest drug companies, warning about a dozen drug company executives that Elijah Cummings was conducting a partisan, as they called it, partisan investigation, warning them not to cooperate with Chairman Cummings. And they accused Chairman Cummings of only being interested in depressing company stock prices, drug company stock prices. So here's Chairman Cummings working towards the goal of reducing drug prices for all Americans. And then you've got Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows off there in the corner obstructing justice by saying that his goal is to just simply depress drug company profits and prices. And folks, here's the deal. By pressuring drug companies to lower drug prices for all Americans, just by virtue of doing that, yeah, it'll probably lower drug company stock prices because of the economics that are involved. It'll probably lower the stock prices, right? You know what? They've been lining their pockets for years, folks, years. And they've been doing it on the back of the American public because they know they can get away with overcharging you. They know it. The facts prove this. They know that they can get away with overcharging you for prescriptions. By God, if negotiating lower prices for drugs depresses their stock prices, and it may, I don't give a rat's patootie. Who cares? This is something that's got to get done. We've got to put the concerns of the American public ahead of their stock prices. It's time for that to happen. So I think we ought to support Elijah Cummings and any other congressman, like I said, Democrat or Republican, trying to solve this problem of drug companies basically fleecing the American public. If that means their stock price falls because they're not fleecing the public, well, then so be it. It's time to shut down the swamp and jam the powerful drug lobby up. You've got to jam it up, that machine that's fleecing the public on drug prices and has been for years. You've got to shut down the efforts of Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows, who are in the pockets of the drug companies, and tell your congressman or congresswoman that your vote depends on their support to allow the government to negotiate lower drug prices. It's a battle between your vote and the major, powerful drug lobby handing out 42% more money to Republicans. And folks, I just have to say, who are you going to let win? Well, stay right there. We've got something coming up here. We're going to just talk a little bit about the spin cycle with Bob Barr. Well, here we go. This is, there was a lot to be heard in that press conference, that Attorney General Barr had, before he released the memo. I'm going to play you just a little segment, and it's very interesting. If we can parse out what he said, there is a treasure trove just in that information. Take a listen to this.
Investigation also examined Russian efforts to publish stolen emails and documents on the internet. The special counsel found that after the GRU disseminated some of the stolen documents to entities that it controlled, DC Leaks and Guccifer II, the GRU transferred some of the stolen materials to WikiLeaks for publication.
Russian intelligence disseminated some info to outlets it controlled. Did you hear him say Guccifer II and DC Leaks? Then the GRU transferred some further information to WikiLeaks for publication, is what he said. So what's interesting here, folks, is that Attorney General Barr is basically splitting hairs here. I've always contended that WikiLeaks is a branch of the GRU, the Russian Secret Service. But the way that they're approaching this is they're saying that Barr resists saying that because later on, this distinction between WikiLeaks being a part of the Russian government, it's critical in his assessment that Roger Stone or anyone else in the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. It's a shell game, folks. They're splitting hairs. It's a shell game. There's an ongoing investigation into Roger Stone about his collusion with WikiLeaks. And I believe Roger Stone, in my personal opinion, colluded with WikiLeaks that we're going to learn more of in the future here as this case unfolds. He colluded with WikiLeaks to disseminate 58,000 emails from Clinton's campaign chairman, John Podesta. Roger Stone had his hands all over this effort. And as his case continues, we can expect more information regarding Roger Stone's involvement. Roger Stone was also in close contact with Trump, who at the time was echoing how much he loved WikiLeaks. We all recall that. And he was also saying that we don't know who leaked this information. Translation, you don't know, America, who hacked the data that WikiLeaks obtained. You don't know. Trump said it could be someone sitting on their couch or bed that weighs 400 pounds. He knew who it was. Trump knew the truth, but that's what he told you. We don't know who it is. But the main takeaway from that sound clip is that Barr draws the distinction that WikiLeaks wasn't actually a Russian-controlled entity, so that allowed Barr to say this. Listen to this one.
The special counsel also investigated whether any member or affiliate of the Trump campaign encouraged or otherwise played a role in these dissemination efforts. Under applicable law, publication of these types of material would not be criminal unless the publisher also participated in the underlying hacking conspiracy.
So this basically lets WikiLeaks off the hook here, folks, because on the outside, WikiLeaks doesn't appear to be an entity controlled by Russia under applicable law. They can't be held responsible. So that's all Russia has to do is set up a puppet company and leak info through that? That makes it all legal? That's how it's going to work? That's how it happens? And by extension, if Roger Stone worked with WikiLeaks, as I suspect that he did, this exonerates him too? Listen to the third clip. 1 second.
Here too, the special counsel's report did not find that any person associated with the Trump campaign illegally participated in the dissemination of the materials.
Well, I don't know, folks. An elementary school kid could see that WikiLeaks and Russia is one in the same. When was the last time you ever heard WikiLeaks say anything bad about Russia? When the Panama Papers got leaked, WikiLeaks didn't think that was really good. You would think they would love it. No, because it uncovered a lot of what the oligarchs were up to. It's one and the same, Russia and WikiLeaks. It's a lame excuse to assume otherwise unless you want to try and exonerate Roger Stone, and say that no one colluded. And you've got to realize that we're dealing with lawyers here, folks, and splitting hairs to exonerate, it's what they do. So you can decide for yourself, but if Roger Stone colluded with WikiLeaks, then he colluded with Russia. End of story. One positive thing in this, folks, if I can pull a positive out of this Mueller report in the conference that, or what we heard from our Attorney General, was that the Attorney General is opting to make a copy of the unredacted report available for a bipartisan congressional group to review, which is something that I kind of mentioned should have happened in one of my podcasts. So, in my opinion, I do give Barr the credit for doing that, for finally allowing some transparency into the report. Why didn't he say this in the beginning? It's really a good move, I think, but Congress needs the full report and they need all of the background facts. They need all the facts behind why Mueller made the distinctions and conclusions that he did, which is why today they just issued a subpoena to get that information. They need the full report to do their job. So the largest looming question that remains is in the nitty-gritty detail of the report, largely around Trump's obstruction of justice. Was this a decision for Barr to make, that the president is exonerated because he didn't exhibit a morally corrupt intent? Or do you think that's up to Congress, which it's in their charter, by the way, oversight of the executive branch, it's in their charter. Do you think that Congress is responsible for oversight of the executive branch and should make this decision? This is going to be the drama that unfolds here in the weeks ahead, the days and weeks ahead. And I personally don't think it's up to Barr, but rather a bipartisan Congress to decide ultimately if Trump obstructed justice. But when you look at it, it's just all over the place. People like Rush Limbaugh, they're all over the air saying that what Barr did was saying stuff like Trump is exonerated. And they want this story about obstruction to end. They just want it to go away. The other day, Rush said that we don't have enough to say that there was obstruction of justice. Well, who is we? Attorney General Bill Barr? As the details on what Trump did and said to obstruct justice emerge, it's up to you, the public, to decide if you're going to believe Attorney General Barr when he says that Trump isn't guilty of obstruction. It's up to you. Well, just brace yourself. You know, this is not going to go away. The cloud is still hanging over Donald Trump. There's 484 pages for any American to read. 484 pages of fact, I might add, folks. It's not fake news. There's tons of supporting information, which is what the Congress is trying to get. Jerry Nadler and Adam Schiff. And we've only got 641 days left, according to the Barbara Bush countdown clock here in the Trump presidency. So I have to say, I mean, by the time this winds itself through court, would a vote of impeachment do anything? I think it's going to rest with the American people just because we don't have enough time to get this thing through. So, folks, we've got some interesting stories here. For shoppers in Wilmington, Massachusetts, they're claiming that an apparition appears to be a young woman in Victorian clothing is wandering the grocery store aisles. And they're saying that this, many shoppers have seen, reported seeing a young woman between the ages of 17 and 30 with light skin, dark hair and blue eyes, in out-of-fashion clothes, wandering the aisles of the Market Basket in Massachusetts on Main Street. One shopper, according to a site called Patch.com, is familiar with her, as she used to visit her home when she lived near the store. The lady says, I saw her and looked away to see if anyone else saw her, and when I looked back, she was gone. The woman who started the discussion reported in a follow-up post, she explained that the sighting happened so quickly, she wasn't able to take a picture. So what better thing to do? Let's see if we can get them on the line. Hang in there, folks. Let's just see if we can get them on the line and put this thing to rest and find out what's going on here.
Good morning, Market Basket. Susan speaking. How can I help you?
Yes, I was wondering if you could just answer a question. I'm from the Rested Culture podcast, and we just have a question really quickly. Is that store purportedly haunted?
I'll give you a manager. Hold on, please.
Okay.
This is Kenny Kyer. How can I help you?
Yes, Kenny, just a quick question for you. You know, we've seen some reports in the media about the store there possibly being haunted, and we're just checking to see if that's the case. We're just trying to verify a story.
That's the story, but we have not verified that there is a haunt, that it's haunted.
Okay. No reports of anybody wandering the aisles or anything like that. So it's it's just kind of it's hearsay at this point then.
Correct.
Okay. Well, Penny, I want to thank you, and good luck on this busy day. Happy Good Friday to you. Thank you.
Thanks, and you also.
Bye-bye. Well, folks, there you have it. The management of the store who's working there every day is evidently, they've not seen this apparition in out-of-date clothes wandering the aisles. I guess we can shut that one down for the moment. Well, moving on here, we've got this interesting story. I don't know if you've seen this one, but it reads like this. It says, pig brains have been brought back to life 4 hours after death in a disturbing experiment. And this is the real deal here, folks. This is a morbid experiment which raises questions about the barrier between life and death. Scientists have revived pig brains hours after being slaughtered. That's something to think about when you're sitting down to your Easter ham. Easter. Well, the researchers found that cell death could be halted and connections in the brain could be restored even after death. But the 32 pig brains collected from an abattoir showed no signs of consciousness, the researchers said. This is a Yale team that's doing this, folks. A team from Yale University. They used pumps, heaters, and bags of artificial blood at body temperature to keep the brains alive. So that's what's going on there at Yale. Researchers found working synapses, which are connections between brain cells and normal responses to drugs in this experiment. This all happened 10 hours after death, although the EEG scans of the brain showed no signs of consciousness. And there's a professor there. I guess he's the culprit. His name is Ninad Sestan, and he's a professor of neuroscience at the Yale University. He said that cell death in the brain occurs across a longer time frame window than we previously thought. We are showing in the process of cell death that it's a gradual stepwise process and that some of those processes can either be postponed, preserved, or even reversed. Well, good luck with the Frankenstein experiments there. I'm not sure what the goal of all of that is, but maybe we'll know in the fullness of time. Little weird, isn't it? What's next? Well, this next story is kind of an interesting one here. This man from La Crosse, Wisconsin, who is not too far from the studio here, he claims to have never placed a bet on sports, and yet, folks, he risked $85,000 on Tiger Woods winning the Masters. He's now more than $1 million richer as a result of doing that. His name is James Aducci, and he was presented with a check for more than $1.2 million last Monday at a sports book in Las Vegas. Aducci's win represents the largest golf payout ever, for sports book operator William Hill, U.S. And he says that his reason for betting thousands with 14-1 odds, evidently, he said that he had a feeling that Woods would win because his children were watching. Tiger Woods' children were watching the game. So he gave him a feeling. How he knew all of this, I have no clue. But I quote him here. He says, in that moment that he won, and I won, what was the most special for me, and it's why I placed the bet in the first place, was just seeing him share that victory with his kids, said Aducci, who is 39. To me, he's a real guy with superhuman golf abilities, and in that moment he had something with his kids that he's never had before. Wow. $1.2 million. Good for him. And he later said that the $85,000 evidently he does a little bit of trading in stocks. He had some losing stocks, and he took that $85,000, packed up the car, went over to Las Vegas, And the rest is history. Came back with a $1.2 million check after doing that. Wow. That is amazing. Just amazing. Well, folks, that is the Rusted Culture Podcast on this Good Friday. I do want to welcome you and thank you. And this little tune is called All of Me. Many of you probably know that. But you can find it on YouTube. It's done by Justin Jordan Dallasay. Justin Jordan Dallasay. Man, he is good at what he does. Give him a listen, and you can subscribe and follow him there. And I just want to thank you to put a thank you out there to Buffalo Bob and Poke Salad Annie. I said I wouldn't use your real names, but they're the ones that kind of shoot these strange stories to me. Help me with some of the research. I want to thank them for that. And folks, I want to welcome you back next time. Look for us next week. So this is the Rusted Culture Podcast, and I'm your host, Frank Ebersold, signing off. You have a great Easter.